Good morning, New Zealand. I might help if I turn the microphone on, actually. It always helps, I think, in radio. I'm here to wish you this is Radio Pacific with you for breakfast on this Monday morning Auckland anniversary holiday and a work day in the rest of the country. So if you've just joined us, wakey, wakey, rise and shine, welcome aboard. Just by the by, story breaking overseas, megastar Michael Jackson's claim that he's the natural father of the two children born to ex-wife Debbie Rowe is a lie. That's according to News of the World in the UK, because Debbie has just filed legal papers for custody of the two children, and in her affidavits she claims that she was artificially inseminated by a sperm donor arranged by Michael Jackson. So it's not even Michael Jackson's natural children, so I'm sure that story will continue to gain some pace during the coming days as Michael Jackson's case unfolds in the media. Whether or not Auckland should have a new airport is in the news. New Zealand Herald, big editorial on it today. Magazine stories on it today. Of course, the rival commercial interests who have a stake in the future of Whenuapai Base have unveiled their ambitions for the site. And joining us now, Tim Brown from Infratil. How are you, Tim?
Good morning.
Now, Infratil is looking at possibly investing in Whenuapai Airport as an ongoing airport operation. Of course, Infratil has a lot of experience running Wellington Airport. What are the advantages, do you think, of Auckland? Does it need a second commercial airport?
Well, need is, of course, a very subjective title term, but and I guess the reality is that Auckland could certainly do with a second airport. It would be a benefit to a lot of people, and we certainly think that it's a viable commercial proposition, so we're willing to give it a go.
What sort of services would you anticipate attracting to Whenuapai? Is it one of those ones where you're effectively, I guess, providing a second gateway to northern, western suburbs who would otherwise have to travel up to an hour and a half to get out to Mangere?
Well, there's a lot of people who have said to us that, for instance, if you leave Long Bay, it can take you twice as long to get to the airport as it will then take you to get to Wellington, for instance.
Yeah.
So naturally it's going to be very attractive for those people. But the sort of airlines that we're looking at attracting to the airport are people like Origin, Freedom, Virgin Pacific, airlines that are not necessarily well served by what is existing at Mangere at the moment.
Now, of course, Auckland Airport, understandably, throwing up some interference. You guys would have experience dealing with that sort of thing. Where do you think this is going to go? Are the claims being made by Auckland that we don't need a second airport valid, or is it just merely commercial posturing?
It's completely in the commercial posturing department. I mean, effectively, amongst some of the claims are that it's much cheaper to do it at Mangere, but what we've got at Mangere at the situation is getting on towards capacity constraints there now. They're going to have to spend a lot of money, probably somewhere, wouldn't be surprising if it was up to $500 million in new terminal facilities and new runway facilities over the next decade to accommodate additional growth over that period. And in addition to that, of course, there's the roading network that people are going to have to spend on, which, of course, is not going to be Mangere Airport.
No. So at this stage, what sort of expressions of interest have you had from potential airline partners?
Well, airlines who we've spoken to, who I guess you'd say would be all of the usual suspects, have said to us that they're interested in Whenuapai as long as Whenuapai is not just going to cannibalise Mangere. So as long as it's not just a matter of somebody who would have flown out of Mangere flying out of Whenuapai. And the more they've looked at it, the more they've realised that what we're talking about is actually growing the market, that we're not necessarily talking about just somebody who would have flown out of Mangere moving his patronage out of the Whenuapai airport.
Well, the other thing too, of course, is that Auckland, if memory serves me correctly, is still one of the world's largest cities in terms of its urban sprawl. And there are many other cities of comparable size in terms of sprawl that have two or more airports.
Oh, exactly. Well, we also own an airport in Glasgow, and Glasgow is a city of not dissimilar size to Auckland, and it has two airports. So there's plenty of cities around the world of Auckland scale who've got two airports.
Now, what about the very active residents group who are opposed to continuing flights out of Whenuapai and obviously want their skies to be clear for the first time in 60 years? Are they likely to pose a serious threat to this plan, or is that to be expected from anywhere in New Zealand where an airport is suggested?
Well, I think local residents in a situation like this have got very valid interests, and those interests are going to have to be recognised in whatever occurs at the airport. But I think also that many of the local community interests, especially from those as far away as Greenhithe or even further away, really, their expressions of concern don't really relate to the level of noise we're actually talking about. I mean, at Wellington Airport, by the time an aeroplane gets to a kilometre away from the runway, you're at Rosneath. And I don't know if how many of your Auckland listeners know Rosneath yet, but it's a suburb which is probably the most valuable, if you like, in Wellington. And an aeroplane noise plays almost no part in its daily life. You just don't notice the aeroplanes at Rosneath. I don't think at Greenhithe you're going to even notice these aeroplanes.
Now, we've talked about the advantages for Aucklanders in having a second airport. What about the advantages to the rest of New Zealand? Because, of course, Auckland is a gateway for other parts of New Zealand to come through. Is there an advantage to people in Wellington or Christchurch for Auckland having an airport at Whenuapai?
Absolutely. I fly to Auckland a great deal. And now it has actually, on one occasion, it even cost me more in a taxi to get from Auckland Airport to the centre of town. But the amount of time that you end up spending on that road, clearly it's a big advantage to me if I can go to Whenuapai and chop down my travel time down to the CBD,
yeah.
Let alone to the West Auckland.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I've noticed too, is the you can spend an hour and a half in travelling to Mangere Airport from parts of Auckland, and as you say, that's it's more in flight time, more in driving time than it is in flight time.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy. So when is the decision likely to be made on this?
Well, the current timetable is that there'll be a few more rounds of discussion between interested parties and Defence over the next 2 months, with Defence making its recommendation to Cabinet towards the end of March, and then Cabinet either making a decision at that point or early April.
Okay, and you're in ongoing discussions with residents to try and assuage some of their concerns?
Well, we haven't, it would be fair to say that we haven't necessarily engaged in discussion at this stage. It's more a case of both sides putting down their proposition.
Yeah.
But our experience at Wellington is that, eventually what does happen is that you do start talking to people, and we listen to them, and we'll try and do something about it. But at the end of the day, we're not about there being clear skies, if you like, over that part of Auckland.
Tim Brown, Infratil, thank you very much for your time, and from my personal point of view, good luck with your application.
Okay, thank you very much.
Cheers. It is 15 minutes away from 7, Radio Pacific. If you just joined us for breakfast, welcome aboard. And coming up before 7 o'clock, we'll discuss the issue of crime victims and families being able to sue the government for negligence for failing to provide a safe environment. This before 7 o'clock. I'm Ian Wishart. This is Radio Pacific. Back in just a moment.
Can I just borrow your cannon?
Yeah, you can.
Ta.
Morning updating news, Nelson police are urging cavers to be aware of their limitations after an inexperienced caving group was rescued from a 174 metre deep hole.
Out of the five, none of them had helmets, no fleeces, one person was dressed entirely in cotton, none of them had socks, they didn't have maps.
Nelson Senior Constable Dave Colville, a minor traffic crash sparked what police believe may have been a gang-related brawl in Hastings at the weekend, and the Coast Guard in Auckland is gearing up for one of its busiest days of the year with today's 164th anniversary day regatta. In sport, a five-stroke win for young Wellington golfer Gareth Patterson across the Tasman at the Victorian Open yesterday, and Sebastian Loeb has won the Monte Carlo Rally in his Citroen for the second consecutive year. It's 11-7 with Ian Wishart on Radio Pacific.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Wishart. This is Radio Pacific. You can join us simply by turning your radio on. And, of course, if you're not listening to this, that's a totally wasted message. The brother of a woman who survived the RSA triple killings in Auckland is backing legal efforts to sue the government for $5 million. The murders at the Panmure RSA in Auckland in December 2001 were committed while the offender, William Bell, was on parole. Now, Ty Hobson, whose wife Mary was among those who died, has lodged a claim in the High Court at Auckland for $50,000 in general damages and $5 million for exemplary damages and costs. Hobson says the Crown's monitoring of Bell while he was on parole was negligent. Bell is serving a 33-year non-parole prison term for the murders of Mrs. Hobson, Wayne Johnson and William Absalom. Another victim, Susan Couch, survived being beaten by Bell with the butt of a shotgun and being left for dead in a pool of blood. Mrs. Couch's brother, Stephen Couch, says he couldn't comment on whether his family would follow Ty Hobson's lead and also take legal action against the Crown, but he supports what Mr. Hobson is doing. Personally, he says, I think it's damn good that someone's done it. It needed to be done because there's a lesson to be learned here. Joining us to nut out this issue of families of crime victims suing the government for negligence, Garth McVicker from the Sensible Sentencing Trust. Garth, good morning.
Good morning. Ian, how are you this morning?
Tired, but you know how it goes. A bit of coffee won't hurt.
Good on you. Thank you, sir.
Now, tell me, this case, the suing for $50,000 plus $5 million exemplary damages and costs, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I think, like Steve Couch said, about time, and it's a good job. On the 22nd of July, Ian, Sensible Sentencing and the families of murder victims presented a request list to Parliament, so they had warning that this was coming.
Is there, do you think there is there any chance of success for this claim?
It's clear right from the start, and it's not about money, obviously. It's about trying to make New Zealand a safer place for all people to live, and Ty is taking this for all the other victims who have suffered similar to he has.
Yeah, I guess in terms of the legal analysis of it, though, I mean, the government is an exceedingly hard beast to actually pin down on anything.
I would have thought, Ian, that the government would basically support this. You know, they paid out thousands of dollars to criminals recently without even contesting it in court.
Yeah, well, that's true. They are very happy to pay out compensation and what have you when it suits them. When it suits them,
absolutely.
But when they are on the back end of a court case, they tend to just dig their toes in and say, get stuffed.
Yeah, Ian, look, nobody's kidding themselves. We know there's a fair fight on our hands, but for 2 years the search has been going on for, let's say, the ideal case and the ideal victim, if there's such a thing. Ty Hobson has been the one for various reasons that will become obvious as we go through the process. That's better to be answered by a lawyer, though.
Sure. Now, who's handling it in terms of legal proceedings?
David Garrett is the barrister, an Auckland barrister, and Keith Jeffries, a solicitor from Wellington, is the instructing solicitor, but there's a very good team of lawyers in behind it.
Yeah. Now, this would set a precedent, obviously, if it gets passed.
A precedent, I suppose. It certainly won't open the floodgate because there's a very high standard that needs to be met to get to the stage that we are already at. So, any fear of opening the floodgates is unfounded.
Is there a particular aspect of Bell's non-supervision on parole that you believe, or that Sensible Sentencing and Ty believe is crucial to this case?
Well, I wouldn't like to itemise those, but Bell breached many of his parole conditions. I suppose we're bit off that's probably the best way to put it, and he wasn't picked up for those breaches, so there's certainly been many breaches, and I think there's a case to answer.
Does the government, do you think, have this attitude, and government agencies like justice and courts and so forth, have this attitude of all care, no responsibility?
That's right. I mean, obviously, where we're heading for, Ian, is some accountability and responsibility here. I mean, our politicians in the past have passed laws and then just done it willy-nilly without accepting accountability and being responsible for them. That's where we're ultimately trying to get here, is some accountability for the laws that are being passed. I mean, where this country's going, Ian, in the last 30 years is a place. I've got four kids and grandkids, and it's a place that, we just don't want to be at present, and we want to have an input in changing the direction that New Zealand's going.
Have you had any response yet from Justice or from Phil Goff of any comment on this claim?
Yes, we have, and probably I'd rather let the lawyers take that one on, but, we have call-over dates for court and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, but have you had any sort of public...
No public
comment?
Whether they're going for it, no.
The cost of this, how's this going to be funded?
A fighting fund has been established, Ian, but my faith in human nature has been somewhat restored. But as I said, a fighting fund has been established, and anybody wishes to support that can send a donation to the Sensible Sentencing Trust, PO Box 701 Napier, and that's going well.
PO Box 707. I was going to ask you, Sensible Sentencing, I mean, it must be hard. It must be a hard thing to do to continue day after day knowing where, New Zealand is going. and to see the same old problems come up time and time again. What is the current status of Sensible Sentencing? What's the popular support for it like, and what are you doing at the moment?
Sensible Sentencing is growing. We, as you know, we have got coordinators throughout the country. I mean, Auckland is our second biggest membership region in New Zealand now, so Auckland's going very well for us. But, yeah, it's hard day to day. I mean, we've been going since 2001. We've had input into some substantial changes, the DNA sex offenders bills, different bills that have been through Parliament. We're in Parliament, we're on any legislation on law and order that we can to promote just basically a safer New Zealand. And we fight hard, but yeah, it's a hard battle, and it's a very lonely battle at times, I don't mind telling you.
What sort of response do you get from Phil Goff and others? Are they listening to you?
Yeah, I think Phil Goff has actually got his... well, I've always said he's got his heart and his head in the right place. I've probably changed that a little bit lately, and I say he's got his heart and his right in the right place. Sometimes I wonder with legislation we're getting where his head's at, but let's hope he's listening.
You never know your luck. What are the big issues, do you think, then, for 2004 for Sensible Sentencing? Is there anything on the horizon apart from this court?
Yeah, there is. We've got a pretty active strategy list, if you like. This obviously is one of the major issues, but in March, Sensible Sentencing is launching an awareness song that's been written by some of, like Kelly Piggott, Trita Cormack's mum, some of the victims of some of these violent crimes, and that will be launched in March, and that will be hugely empowering to the victims. But it's all about awareness, Ian. You know, you and I own the problem. We own the direction that New Zealand's going. If we're not happy, we've got to change it, and that's what this is all about.
Yeah. It is going to be a very interesting case, of course. It'll be, a good 2 years before this one hits the courts, won't it?
Yeah, it'll be an very interesting case, Ian. You know, there'll be a lot of toing and froing and going on, but as I said, we've done our groundwork very, very carefully, and the preparation has been going on for 2 years.
So if it's not about money, if it's about really just staking the, putting a stake in the ground and sort of saying this is what we need for New Zealanders, there's no chance of this then settling as such. You guys want your day in court?
Yep. We do. I mean, there's two real asks here, Ian, that Sensible Sentencing has been asking since 2001 when we started, is that we want urgent legislation to ensure that those convicted of premeditated or aggravated murder receive a true whole-of-life sentence. And number two, violent and or repeat offenders to serve their judge-given sentences rather than letting them out and just recycling them. I mean, justice in New Zealand
I know where we're going. We're just running out of time. But, Garth, best of luck for the court case. And we'll be back after 7 o'clock with more news to chew over, including, as I just checked through it, the Winston Peters saga. Has it been handled well by the media? What do you think? Stay tuned. Grab a coffee, grab some breakfast, it's Wakey Wakey Rise and Shine.
If I could see...